You should decide. Is it too much light?
I think this light is extra.
What?
If we can switch off that light.
Yes. Michael, can you switch off all the lights?
Okay.
So, in some sense, I'm very unprepared for this talk because usually I think about my talk in the last minute, but the last two talks were very exciting for me, so I followed very carefully, and here you go. I did work very hard preparing this handout, and let's hope that it will guide me. That's not how it's supposed to go. Normally you're supposed to guide your presentation, but that's what I have. So, the abstract you've read, I will describe to the best of my understanding the relationship between virtual knots and netting of kashtan, and let me start. So first of all, I want to start with a completely general, abstract situation. So let K be an algebra. So if the presenter doesn't work, maybe at least the... Oh, maybe I just didn't turn it on. Ah, that's why it didn't work. Good. Sorry. So let K be an algebra, and I an ideal in it, and it should be an augmentation ideal in some sense, but this is not a terribly important piece of information. You can always form powers of this ideal. Then you can mod out by, you can take K and mod it out by powers of this ideal, take the inverse limit and call it K hat, and that's the iadic completion of that algebra. Another thing you can do is you can take the associated graded of K with respect to the ideal. This is, you take the mth power of the ideal divided by m plus first power and take the completely direct sum of all of these. And then the associated graded has an obvious product in it, which it inherits from the algebra. And in particular, it has a 1-1 part for this product, the degree 1 times the degree 1 part. So you look at the degree 1 part of this GER of K and call it C. So C is just I mod I squared, and the product goes from there to the degree 2 piece, which is I squared modulo I piece. And let me define the quadratic approximation of the algebra, or more precisely, the quadratic approximation of the associated graded of the algebra, to be the algebra freely generated by C. Okay, so the algebra freely generated by the degree 1 piece, divided by the relations you see in degree 2. Okay, so in some sense, it's an approximation to GER I of K. Now, there is an obvious surjection of this to the associated graded. But it may or may not be an injection. Anyway, the prized object, the object I will want to find, and I will explain later why, is a homomorphic A expansion. So what it is, it's a filtered homomorphic map. Homomorphic means that it sends the product to a product. Filtered means, well, K is filtered by the powers of the ideal, and every graded space is also filtered. So something that preserves the filtration. So it's a homomorphic filtered map, which whose associated graded, so its GER will go from the GER of K to the GER of A, which is A again, so its GER will go from GER K to A, inverts the product. Okay, so there is always a product from A to GER of K, inverts the obvious surjection from A to GER of K. And so this is a completely general sort of, it happens at the generality of rings, okay? and in fact at a much higher generality. And what I want to argue is that, or my dream is to interpret all interesting graded objects and equations in mathematics, especially the ones around quantum groups, in this language. So I have to explain what I mean by that. So first of all, what I mean is that all graded spaces, or all interesting graded algebras that occur in quantum group theory should arise from this construction, so should arise as such A's for various K's. And, well, you see, what does it mean to find a homomorphic Z? So, typically K will be finitely presented. So, it will be generated by a number of generators which have to satisfy a number of relations. So, finding a homomorphic Z from K to A would mean to find the values of the generators. So, it would mean to guess values inside graded spaces which solve equations, the equations for the relations. So, all equations should arise from the attempt to find such a Z. Okay, so that was obviously way too abstract. So let's interpret it.
What was that FC?
FC, it's the object generated by the degree one piece.
You're saying everything should be generated by degree one?
So I'm saying that well, in the algebras you care about, everything is generated in degree one. And, in that particular part of quantum groups that I'm talking about, everything is generated by the degree one piece, and everything and all the equations occur in degree two and come from that structure. So, you know, maybe I should have called it not a dream, but rather a thesis. So a thesis is something that can be disputed. Okay? So the idea is, let's find out how much this is true. And what I want to argue is that it's very true in many cases, and obviously you can construct counterexamples or places in which it isn't true. Sort of, if you couldn't, it wouldn't be interesting, it would be tautological. Okay. So let me give the first example. So the first example is K is the group ring of the braid group on a number of strands. Okay? The ideal I is the ideal generated by an overcrossing minus an undercrossing, or in other words, it's just the augmentation ideal of this group ring. And, but a different way of saying it is to say that it's generated by an overcrossing minus an undercrossing, also known as a double point. So I'll interpret a purple double point to mean an overcrossing minus an undercrossing. I modulo m plus 1 would be braids that have m plus 1 double points. A linear functional on K modulo I to the m plus 1 would be a functional, meaning an invariant of braids, which vanishes whenever you have m plus 1 double points. So that's what we would often call the finite type invariant of type M, so that's the space Vm. You can show that Im modulo Im plus 1 is just invariance modulo type invariance of type M modulo invariance of type M minus 1. So the dual of that is that. So the dual of the associated graded that I've considered is the space of weight system. It's the space of invariance of type M when you ignore invariance of type M minus 1. The space C, so when you look at I modulo I squared, it's generated by double points. Double points can go between two different strands, so it's generated with generators called Tij, where I and J denote the numbers of the strands that are connected in this double in these double points. And an alternative notation for that is, well, to just draw the strands vertically and replace the double points by a horizontal cord connecting these two strands. We've seen this an hour ago in Alexeyev's talk. Now, since we mod out by I squared, that's the only information that is retained from the braid. Okay? Only where, so I mean, if a braid with a double point has more crossings in it, you can always flip them as you wish, because the difference would be in I squared. So C is just the space of single chords. FC, the free thing generated by C, would be the space of horizontal chord diagrams, again seen in Anton's talk a few minutes ago. And you can check that the kernel of the map from degree 1 squared into degree 2 is precisely the so-called 40 relations. So the relations that Anton wrote. So the space A is simply the space of horizontal chord diagrams modulo 40 relations. And finally, Z should be a map from K to A. So it should be a map from braids into horizontal chord diagrams. So that's what's called the universal finite type invariant. And it's actually very hard to find one, or to find a homomorphic one. And the easiest construction I'm aware of is the so-called Concievich integral. Okay? So I guess I wanted to both emphasize that the construction is completely general, completely abstract, but also that it specializes to something that people here know, or at least some people here know very well. Okay. Why is Z a prized object? So, first of all, it tells you, how big, somehow, how big K is, or Ger of K is. A priori, Ger of K could have been very small, but if there is a map which shows it isomorphic to A, then well, A is somehow a combinatorial gadget, so you can somehow measure Ger of K, or it gives you an information about Ger of K. About Ger of K, yes. Secondly, you see, often you want to ask yourself topological questions about K. So for example, you can ask yourself, does a braid have a square root? Okay? So it's not terribly interesting in the case of braids, but in the cases that I will study later, these topological questions would be more interesting. But anyway, you want to ask yourself, does K have a square root? Well, if its image under Z does not have a square root, then K itself could not possibly have a square root. So, certain questions about braids are reduced via Z to questions about that happen in A, and A is in principle a manageable space. Okay, it's defined by linear things, modulo quadratic relations. So in principle, you could get topological information out of having a good Z. And I think I'll skip the rest of that for now. Okay, second example. So I'm going to go through a series of examples that will culminate with my view of what Kashdan told us, or part of what Kashdan told us, 2 or 3 hours ago. So, a second example is you could take K to be the group ring of the pure virtual braid group on N strands. So, virtual braids were mentioned earlier, and I'm not sure I want to repeat the definition, but roughly speaking, these are things that look like braids when you look. So, when you look, you see crossings, and these crossings, if you look at them, satisfy the Rademeister moves. However, things can go transparent, and you can just barely maybe see it over here, that these two, when you didn't look, these two strands still crossed places. Okay? So these are virtual braids. Now, the quadratic approximation to the associated graded of pure virtual braids is as follows. So the singular object here would be an overcrossing minus a don't loop, or an undercrossing minus a don't loop. So there are two generators in degree one. So there are, and in fact, sort of the way to separate them is to put an arrow from the overstrand to the lower, to the understrand. So the associated braided will be generated by, or in degree one, will have horizontal arrows. And the free thing generated by it would be, would look like this, would look like arrow diagrams. And there will be some relations which I'm not specifying, but they are similar to the 6T relation, so to the 4T relation that we mentioned before. And a theorem of Peter Lee, who is now videotaping me, is that a Z exists, however, it's not homomorphic. So it satisfies all the conditions except homomorphicity, and a theorem of Bartholdy, Ettinghoff,
Enriquez, and Rains
is that there isn't a homomorphic one. So again, this is somehow good news because it means that the problem is not tautological. The existence of Z is not tautological. Okay, that's all I have to say about the setup as it existed at the beginning. Now I want to generalize and rather than using an algebra as the input, use an arbitrary algebraic structure. So an arbitrary algebraic structure is a collection of spaces, call them K1, K2, K3, K4, with a collection of operations between them. So maybe there will be a phi 1 going from K1 to K2, maybe there will be a binary phi 2 going from K1 and cross K2 into K3, and maybe there will be more. So this is just a schematic. So for example, a category is an algebraic structure. For every pair of objects, you have a space of morphisms, and between certain pairs of spaces of morphisms, there is a binary composition operation. So a category is an algebraic structure, but there are many more. Okay? The structures that I will use will always need to have a free structure so that I can imitate the free thing over C. And I always allow formal linear combinations of objects, so I'm always allowing, if K is something defined by K, I will, by knots, I will always allow myself to use linear combinations of knots or whatever other object will appear in K. And then I'll extend all operations to be bilinear or multilinear. And the claim is that the whole box of above still works. And you can define equally well the associated graded. You can define, within such an algebraic structure, there is always an augmentation ideal. So these are linear combinations of objects that live in one space and whose sum of coefficients is equal to zero. This forms an ideal, and everything else above still works. Okay. So I guess the next example is still of the same flavor, but instead of a group, let's take a quandl. And I guess my axioms are not quite the same as sort of the primary axiom. Right distributivity is the same as everybody else's, but I also add these axioms. And the claim is that if you take a quandl, then the associated, sorry, then the quadratic approximation to the associated graded will be a graded Lie algebra. So, again, all I wanted was to show an example, an extra example. Anyway, here is the first, or maybe the second, maybe the third, in fact, truly interesting example. So, the algebraic structure I will take now will be parenthesized braids. So, parenthesized braids have object parenthetizations, as shown here and here. Morphisms are braids that connect these parenthetizations. The composition is to stack things on top of each other, provided their endpoints match. So, provided the parenthetizations match. Algebraic structure, just as a category, is an algebraic structure. But I actually want it with some further operations. So, with some further, the further operations, the most interesting of those will be the doubling operation. So, D2 would mean count from the bottom to the second strand and double it. So, if you double it, you get a picture like this, where the two daughter strands of the doubled one, of the one that got doubled, are parenthesized to the innermost. Okay? And one can, and then there are a couple of other less interesting operations, but one can show that with these operations, the category of parenthesized braids is finitely presented, and it is generated by two generators. One generator is the associativity that Anton talked about, and the other generator is just the crossing. Again, Anton talked about it, but so did everybody else. There are a few relations, and the most interesting of these is the pentagon relation. So the pentagon relation says that if you multiply an associativity with an added strand on the right, with an associativity with the middle strand doubled, with an associativity with a double strand on the left, what you get is the same parenthesized braid as what you get if you multiply an associativity with a doubled first strand with an associativity with a doubled last strand. Okay? So now, if we wanted to find a homomorphic expansion for parenthesized tangles, we would just have to decide on the value of A. It turns out that the value of sigma is somehow less interesting. It's essentially unique, so you don't have to solve anything in order to find sigma. But you just need to decide on the value of A, and that, okay, A has to take values in the associated in the quadratic approximation to the associated graded, which sort of, since this is essentially braids, the target space turns out to be essentially the same algebra as in the case of braids, so horizontal chord diagrams modulo 40 relations. And that value A of A has to satisfy a pentagon equation. Okay? A is phi of Anton and of David, and the equation is the pentagon equation. So, so finding Z for the case of parenthesized braids is precisely solving for an associator. Okay? Finally, well, just as an aside, well, it turns out, so an associator is a map Z from K to A, but there are many such associators, and in fact, an associator can be shown to be an isomorphism of K to A, or the completion of K to A. So, the Grothendieck-Teichmuller group, well, whenever you have a set of isomorphism, it is acted on by two groups. One group is the group of automorphisms of A, and the other group is the group of automorphism of K hat. So these two groups are the groups, the Groth and the Tankmuller group that Anton mentioned, and an associated graded version of it, or a graded version of it called GRD. I guess the only reason I'm mentioning it, and I'm mentioning it with no details whatsoever, is just to say that that piece of graded algebra also fits in this general framework. Okay? Okay. Let me continue. So the next example will be even closer to knot theory. So the objects, or sort of the elements in my algebraic structure will be knotted trivalent graphs. So a knotted trivalent graph is a thing that, well, here are three examples. And, well, really, it's a collection of spaces. So for every abstract trivalent graph, there is the set of all knottings of that graph. So this is a knotting of a tetragraph. In fact, it's the unknotted tetragraph, but it doesn't look like it. So this is a knotting of a strange unknotting of the tetragraph. This is a genuine knotting of the tetrahedron, and so is this. Okay? So these two are objects of the same kind in my algebraic structure. Well, if it is to be an algebraic structure, it should also have operations. And the operations are, well, if you have a knotted trivalent graph which has a part that looks like this, but you see this line in the middle could itself be knotted. I'm just drawing it unknotted because I'm lazy. Okay? Then you could either drop this line and get a knotted trivalent graph, a knotting of a different graph, or you could unzip this line. So again, unzip just means replace it by two parallel strands that themselves can be complicated, can be knotted, but they would be knotted in the same way as this was. Okay? So that again maps you into a different set of, into the space of knottings of a different graph. And then there is also a binary operation, and the binary operation is to take two knotted prevalent graphs and either add an edge connecting two of their edges, and it's a little bit of an amusing exercise to see that this is well defined once you've chosen which two edges to connect. Or you can connect two vertices to each other and sort of replace two vertices by a three-lane highway. Okay? Anyway, the next claim is that that space of knotted trivalent graphs is itself finitely presented. So it turns out that it is generated by something not interesting, the Ribbon twist, and an interesting generator, which is the tetrahedron. So, modulus on relations, and again, there are many relations, but let me show only the interesting ones. So, you can take three tetrahedra, and then do this vertex connect sum, connecting this one with that one, and then you'll have this funny edge going like that. And then you can, well, unzip it and isotope to the bottom, and what you got is a triangular prism looked at from above. Likewise, you could have taken two tetrahedra and done the same, and you'll again get a triangular prism. So you get another 3 equals 2 relation, and the claim is that with phi taken to be the values of the tetrahedron, this again becomes the Drinfeld pentagon equation, but now with values in a different space. So previously, it was the pentagon equation considered in horizontal chord diagrams, and now it's the pentagon equation considered in a different space of chord diagrams. Now, in the interest of saving time, I will not prove this theorem and not explain too much about the pentagon, but only tell you what the target space is. So the target space, I wonder if somebody can do something about the light coming from the outside. So the target space will be, so I guess in the case of the knotted graph, which only has two parallel arcs in it, the target space will be the space of all, well, basically you take the skeleton of your graph and superimpose on it a purple trivalent graph. So this is this purple trivalent graph, and mod out by it, and mod it out by relations that involve only the purple parts. So one relation is the IHX relation, and then there are more. Okay? And the point about this space is that in some sense it parameterizes formulas that can be written in any, whenever you have a metrized Lie algebra, a Lie algebra that also has an inner product in it, which is non-degenerate and symmetric and invariant. Okay? Why? So, given a metrized Lie algebra, you can form an, you can take an orthonormal basis for it, call it XA, and then, given a trivalent graph like here, you can label its edges with letters in the English alphabet, so A, B, C, D, E, F, and then you interpret every internal vertex as a copy of the structure constants of the Lie algebra. So ABC will become FABC, the vertex DCE will become FDCE, and then you also use the skeleton pieces to read words in the universal enveloping algebra of this Lie algebra. So here you see an A followed by a D followed by an F, so the word that you read is XA, XD, XF, and here you see B followed by an F followed by an E, so that's the word that you read over here. And then the claim, so I guess the point is that pictures like this, which again, these are the pictures that arise as the quadratic approximation to knotted trivalent graphs. So they came completely naturally, with no choices, without having to make any choices. They came automatically from knot theory. But anyway, these pictures represent formulas that can be interpreted in any metrized Lie algebra. So with these formulas, or with this interpretation, the pentagon that you write, that, or the equation for the pentagon that we got previously, becomes the pentagon for a specific Lie algebra. So if you find Z, a homomorphic expansion for knotted trivalent graphs, you'll find a pentagon for, or you'll find a solution phi for the pentagon in any Lie algebra. Okay. I guess the next example will be extremely sketchy. So instead of talking about knots, we could talk about ribbon two knots in R4. So without even defining what a ribbon two knot is, let me tell you how to represent them. So take a ribbon in R3. This is a ribbon in R3. And it can be interpreted as a tube in R4. So what you do is you take this ribbon. It has a membrane, right? The membrane appears here in sort of light brown. And you take this membrane and you double it. And you take one copy and you push it up in R4. So you push it up in the time, in the coordinate you cannot see. And you take another copy and you push it down in the coordinate you cannot see. And then you get a tube in R4. And then with this convention, well, there are other things that get R4 interpretation. So for example, an end of a ribbon, of a band, becomes a tube that ends, okay? In R4, And I guess I will denote this occasionally simply by just a blue line, and then this will be a blue line that terminates. A ribbon that twists in R3, and this is a bit confusing, when you thicken it in R4, actually becomes a piece of a Klein bottle. So, which in some papers by Japanese authors is called a wen, so I will call it a wen too. Though I'm not quite sure why it is called a wen. Okay? And finally, if you have three ribbons meeting in a vertex, well, what you get is a certain hard to... so again, you thicken it with the same procedure, and you get a certain singular surface in R4, which I will not say much about it, except that my notation for it will be simply a trivalent blue vertex. Then there are... Then there are further things that can occur. So, two ribbons can pass next to each other, but since this is really happening in R4, it doesn't matter which way they pass. Okay? So the overcrossing of ribbons is the same as the undercrossings of ribbons. So if I wanted a two-dimensional notation for it, it would be a so-called a virtual crossing, a crossing where the sense is not specified. Okay? On the other hand, well, two ribbons cannot intersect in R3, but if they were to represent sort of knotted surfaces in R3, but as knotted surfaces in R4, it's completely fair to have them intersect this way, because somehow the smaller tube, the inner one, is completely goes through the bigger one. And you can check that there are no intersections in this picture in R4. So this will become, so in two-dimensional notation, this will be the crossing. And I guess my convention will be that the somehow bigger band will represent the overcrossing, or will be represented by the overside of the crossing. However, crossings like that do not make sense in R4, because if you think about it, somewhere along the line going from here to here, there will have to be a singularity, a real singularity, in R4. Okay? Then there are relations. And it turns out that the relations are Rademeister 2, 3, 4 over these blue things, and also virtual Rademeister 1, 2, 3, 4, and the detour move that Luke Kaufman mentioned for this type of crossings. Then there is the relationship over crossings commute. So if you have a crossing and a virtual, you can pass the crossing to the other side of the virtual, and you can see it very clearly from this ribbon picture. Clearly you can slide the horizontal band down to the bottom. However, under crossings do not commute. So if you flip these two crossings, then you cannot slide it down. And the reason is, so this is the picture for the flipped version, and if you try to push it up, clearly the horizontal band sort of gets twisted as it goes to the other side. So the two sides are not isotopic. And then there are a few more relations in which, again, there is some symmetry breaking. So you can slide an endpoint under a strand, but not above a strand, and then there is also some relation for W, for the wanes. Then there are also unary the operations are, well, you can glue such things to each other. Okay, so basically you can, maybe the best way to think about it is to think about it in the plane. If you have a planar picture made out of these ingredients, and if you have two such planar pictures, you can put them side by side and glue the ends. Okay? So, in other words, these gadgets form a planar algebra. Again, an algebraic structure. But then there are also unary operations. So, if you have two trivalent vertices next to each other, you can, so the middle band here really represents an annulus, and you can replace it by two parallel annuli, sort of one a little bit inside the other. This is the picture shown here. and that's the annulus and zip move. And similarly, there is an unzip move that that can be performed when you have a trivalent vertex that gets connected to a dead end. Okay? And then there's a complex algebraic structure that I want to discuss. The full algebraic structure that I want to discuss is W trivalent tangles, which is the planar algebra generated by the generators above, with the relations stated above, and with the extra operations stated above as well. Okay. The homomorphic expansion problem in this case turns out to be equivalent to a certain combinatorial or algebraic problem considered by Kashiwara, Vern, Alexeyev, Enriquez, and Torossian. So something that has to do with proving that convolutions on the Lie group and convolutions on the Lie algebra are somehow isomorphic. But roughly speaking, the way it works is, well, the planar algebra, the algebraic structure we studied is generated by two or three generators. So one generator is the crossing, and it's not terribly interesting. It turns out that the value of the crossing is almost automatic. By the vertex, and it turns out that the value of the vertex is very hard, and it's somehow the key point, and let's call it V. By the when, which is not terribly interesting, and by the end point, which is sort of somewhere in between. Okay? And then there are equations, and I'm writing only the interesting ones. It turns out that most equations are very easy to solve, but these are the ones that are hard to solve. And when you interpret these equations in the quadratic approximation to that algebraic structure, well, the quadratic approximation turns out to be a certain space of diagrams that represent elements in the free Lie algebra. So these equations turn out to have interpretations in various free Lie algebras and various associated spaces, and they become exactly the equations written over here that were written by Alexeyev Torossian a few years ago in a wonderful paper that I spent about 2 years reading. Okay. And I guess I have like 3 minutes for the main example. So the main example is, so let's generalize WTT to be VTT. So VTT is essentially the same, except you have to be a little more careful about orientations. And you mod out by everything as before, except you do not mod out by overcrossings commute. So these are virtual trivalent tangles. Okay? And again, it's a planar algebra, and again, you have various unzip operations. And the quadratic approximation to that space was identified by Polyak and Ohtsuki. And it is, again, a certain space like the space of chord diagrams, except the chords have arrows on them. And you only allow acyclic diagrams, so diagrams in which there are no closed cycles made out of closed-oriented cycles made out of purple arrows. And then you mod out by versions of the IHX relations and versions of the other relations that we saw before. And the point is that this space, well, the previous space paired with Lie algebras, with metrized Lie algebras. So given a metrized Lie algebra, you get a formula in the universal enveloping algebra of this Lie algebra. This space pairs with Lie bi-algebras. So it's somehow kind of the right setup in which to solve equations that have to do with Lie bi-algebras. So, and again, I think I will have to skip the details, but the point is that given a Lie by algebra, you can construct its double, and whenever you have a diagram like this, you get an element in a certain power of the universal enveloping algebra of its dual. Sorry, of its double. So, the claim is that a homomorphic expansion exists, and furthermore, that the existence of a homomorphic expansion is, well, not quite all of what David told us about before, but a substantial part of, so David has had several parts to his construction, and this is basically all by the last part, all but the last part. So the existence of a homomorphic expansion is precisely what David has proven, what Ettinghoff and Kashdan have proven some 15 years ago. Now, I'd like to call it a forbidden theorem because it's forbidden to me, okay? And the reason it's forbidden, well, minor reason is that some minor statement details might be off. I mean, I might have messed up some orientations or things like that. Another reason is that there isn't a fully written proof, but maybe now I, well, it's you'd have to look at many, many sources in order to assemble a proof of this statement, okay? But the main reason is that I don't understand the proof. And so it's forbidden for me to use. The reason I don't understand it is because the statement has an interpretation, not theory, and I would expect the proof to have an interpretation in not theory as well, or at least the interesting parts of the proof to have an interpretation in not theory as well, but I don't have this interpretation yet. So I guess I'll show you in just a few words, first of all, why I care, and later I'll go back to the Alexeyev-Torossian example just to sort of illustrate that it actually makes sense for the proof to have a non-theoretic interpretation as well, not just for the statement. Okay? So, why should we care? Well, to me, it's a gateway to the overall forbidden theory of quantum groups. You know, if I don't know, I've never understood, I've never fully understood Kashdan's approach, where, or the general sort of approach in which instead of studying, okay, you find the objects to be too hard, so you study their category of representations, and you kind of, every time you see a desired property of the object, you translate it to a property of its category of representations, and it's always indirect and dual somehow. Whereas that would be a completely direct approach. You just write the generators and relations and you solve and the equations arise automatically. That's one reason. Another reason is that the space of diagrams that you get here is actually sometimes easier. So the space of diagrams that you get with arrows is actually sometimes easier than the space without arrows, the usual case of not theory. An example of that is the Alexander polynomial, which in the V case arises much more easily than in the standard Concievich integral picture. The V space has many more interesting quotients, and in fact, than the usual space, and in fact, it may have more interesting quotients than there are Lie by algebras. So, you know, if we're looking for computable not invariants with good properties, that's a good place to look. Now, why should one care about computable not invariants with good properties? Well, let's go back to the example I gave in the beginning about finding this, deciding whether a braid has a square root. Okay, the moment you have a computable invariant which is homomorphic, it allows you, it helps you decide whether a braid has a square root.
In a completion.
What?
In a completion.
Well, valued anywhere, in fact. Valued in some algebraic place.
Okay.
But in particular, valued in AV.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, once you switch to non-determinant graphs, or non-determinant virtual graphs, with the operations we have, we can state more interesting things than a braid has a square root. So it turns out that with the algebraic operations we have, the property of being a ribbon, so for a knot to be a ribbon knot, that property is algebraically defined, or algebraically definable. So the moment you have a homomorphic invariant, a homomorphic expansion for non-determinant graphs or for virtually non-determinant graphs, you will have a handle on testing whether a knot is ribbon or not. And likewise, there are several other topological things that can be decided or could potentially be decided with the homomorphic expansion. Now, so you could say, why not look for a homomorphic expansion with values in AU, so just in the ordinary KTG case, not the trivalent graph case. Well, it turns out that this involves finding an associator, and this is a notoriously difficult problem, even if you reduce by as many relations as you can, even if you mod out by as much as you can. However, in AV, there are many more quotients inside which that can be, or can potentially be realized. So that's, you know, my talk is about dreams, so that's a part of the dream. I guess I don't really have time to tell you how sort of the knot language is not only about the problem, but also about its solution. But if I had time, I would tell you that sort of Alexei Ventorossian tell you how from a value of V you can find an associator, and in knot theory it just amounts to saying that every non-determinant graph in R3 can also be interpreted in R4. And Alexeyev, Enriquez, and Torossian tell you that given an associator, you can find a value for the vertex. You can find a V. And this is much, much, much harder and involves, but still sort of topologically manageable. And it involves adding one-dimensional objects to the three-dimensional objects, to the two-dimensional objects that we had in R4. So you see, one-dimensional strands cannot be knotted in R4. But jointly with two-dimensional things, they can be knotted. So the mixed theory in which you have both one-dimensional and two-dimensional things is an interesting theory, and it has a few new operations. And with these operations, you end up writing a formula for the value of V from the value of an associator. And again, this is written here. And in fact, this is somehow the key, or this is the key to the Ettingov of Kasdan construction, reduced to the co-commutative case. But no way I will explain it now. So I'll just say, you know, If you look at my website, you'll see how it's related to the Alexander polynomial. You'll see that there are many other kinds of virtuals in which you can ask similar questions. This you will not see on my website, but I hereby tell you that I really need help. So the project is bigger than my size, and if other people help me, it will be great, and I'll end with my standard propaganda. Thank you. Apology in the beginning. Sorry.